members, we don't have quorum, but, so we're not officially calling the meeting to order, but we're just kind of calling the discussion to order, if we will, until and if we have quorum. Before we get going through the agenda, and Senator Rest and I have been discussing, we do have a lot of resource folks here today, so it makes sense probably to have maybe the bulk of the discussion, questions, and conversation with those folks here today. And then maybe if we don't have quorum, to have official action at a later meeting if that quorum does not materialize yet here today. But before we do get going, Senator Metzen was a colleague and a friend of, I think, all of us. He was someone who was a really very respected leader in the Senate, very thoughtful, very jovial, collegial, and very well respected. Let's all stand and give a moment of silence for the senator. Thank you. With that, we can we elect the chairs?
No.
We can't elect a chair today. So with that, I think Senator Rest is probably going to end up being the chair of this body, so I think her and I will just kind of co-lead the discussion today, if that's okay with folks informally.
It's fine with me.
And with that, we can't approve the minutes. Is there any reason to review them at this time? Probably not, Mr. Hubinger. Okay. We can do that, dispose of those at the next time we do have quorum, or later today if it does materialize. We have before us a discussion about the arbitration award and collective bargaining agreement with the Minnesota Government Engineering Council. Could those who are listed here and any others, of course, be prepared to come in and talk with the members of the committee that are here today? First of all, Mr. Hudson, are you here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, if you could, and I don't know, what does everybody think? Mr. Hudson, that's like 50 yards from here. Do you want to just kind of join in maybe somewhere closer here, right next to Senator Eaton there maybe?
Sure, this would be good.
Would be good. And
yeah, I would go there, because okay. Michelle should be coming over here.
I'll try to project my voice so that you can hear me clearly as well.
Thank you. Mr. Hudson, go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you. Representative Drowski, Senator Dress, thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to come before you. My name is Edwin Hudson, and I have the honor of serving Minnesotans as the Deputy Commissioner of Human Capital at Minnesota Management and Budget. Joining me today is Carolyn Trevis, who is our acting lead state negotiator. During the last legislative session, you approved negotiated agreements and compensation plans for 8 of the 9 of our bargaining units. The 8 bargaining units with approved contracts and plans represent 97% of our state employees. Negotiations with Minnesota Government Engineering Council, MGEC, ended at impasse. MGEC represent about 990 engineers, most of whom work at the Department of Transportation. Based on guidelines under Minnesota Public Employment Labor Act, PELRA, impasse was referred to arbitration. The arbitration hearing was held June 2nd through June 3rd of this year, and arbitrator Gerald Whalen issued his decision shortly thereafter on July 22nd. MMB proposed the across-the-board increase of 2.5%, as was negotiated with all other bargaining units, again representing about 97% of state employees. MGEC argued a 3.5% for engineers in the top 3 employee classifications and 2.5% for remaining engineers. MGEC also argued that the engineering specialist seniors, ESS classification, should be moved up from range 7 to range 8. Finally, they argued that the employer contribution to the defined compensation plan should be increased from $350 per year to $400 for the first year, from $300 to $350 for the first year and $400 for every year thereafter. So that's $300 is where it's at currently, taking it up to $350 for the first year and $400 for each year thereafter. While MMB believes that the arbitration award is reasonable, we would like to point out that it is not consistent with the 2.5% increase that was approved for all other bargaining units, nor is it consistent for all engineers in the MGEC bargaining unit. Finally, MMB is concerned with the rationale that the arbitrator used to arrive at its decision. And briefly, I would ask that you would allow Carolyn Trevis, again, our assistant lead negotiator, to add some comments on some of those particulars, some high-level comments on some of those particulars, some of those things that you might have for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. And Ms. Trevis, I apologize for not recognizing you as you came up, too, and I should have looked further down on the agenda. So we have heard from you numerous times, and thanks for being here today.
Chairman Drazkowski and members of the subcommittee, I'm Carolyn Trevis. I'm the assistant state negotiator, and several of you have probably seen me before. I've been with the state since 1998 and have been leading the labor relations division since January of this year, when the state negotiator, Marcy Cordes, left to join the Metropolitan Council. The three codes at which the arbitrator decided to award the 3.5%, those codes are for licensed engineers and our land surveyors. So those are the employees who will be receiving the 3.5% if you approve the arbitration award. That covers 383 employees, which is about 41% of the bargaining unit that will receive the 3.5%. As Deputy Commissioner Hudson said to you, there are a few points of disagreement that we have with the award. However, we are not opposing the award. Part of the rationale for increasing the pay for those employees at the maximum rates.
Ms. Trevis, excuse me. Senator Rest has a question for you.
Ms. Trevis, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Trevis, if MMB doesn't oppose the award, if they did, is there any appeal to the arbitration award that is possible through the courts or anywhere else, or is this the final thing even though you don't like it?
Senator Rest, an interest arbitration award is considered final and binding. So the only way that we could not comply with the award is if the subcommittee would vote to reject the award. And then in that case, the parties would go back to the table to negotiate.
So the subcommittee could object, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Travis, the subcommittee could reject the arbitration.
Ms. Travis?
Correct. Under statute, that is possible.
But Mr. Chairman, Ms. Travis, so the award will go into the, apparently we're not going to be able to take any action. So the award goes into effect August 30th. What role does a full legislature play in a arbitration award if the legislature decided that you needed to go back to the bargaining table?
Ms. Travis.
Senator Russ and members of the committee, if the full legislature did not approve the award, then we would be in the same place as if the subcommittee did not approve the award. We would have to go back to the bargaining table.
Chairman, Ms. Trevis, but prior to that, since that can't happen until at least January, and I'm not suggesting it does, I'm just trying to get the timetable, the award goes into effect. The raises are granted retroactive to July 1 of 2015, and even if the legislature unexpectedly rejected the arbitration award, those raises would not be rescinded except going forward, or they'd be in effect until a new contract was negotiated? Would they be in effect at the 3.5 or at some other increase?
Ms. Trevis.
Just trying to understand how that works.
Sure. Senator Russ and members of the subcommittee, at the point that the legislature would reject the arbitration award, we would not go back and collect any monies that have been paid to those employees.
Mm-hmm.
However, at that point, the 3.5% and the 2.5% increases would have to cease, and so then we would again go back to the bargaining table
and
to
revert
renegotiate
back to prior to July 1 of 2015,
and any increases on July 1st of 16, because there's actually two increases, Senator Rust,
okay,
and the subcommittee.
Okay.
Yes.
So with that,
okay.
Ms. Trevis, so what this subcommittee, if we don't meet between now and the end of the month, it goes into effect. If we meet on September 8th,
too late,
and would reject it at that point, what would the outcome then be? It wouldn't. We can no longer act
it's
after
too late.
That is what you're saying.
Senator Russ and Representative Drazkowski and the subcommittee, my understanding is that if you do not take action within the 30 days after we submitted the arbitration award, it does go into effect.
We got one swing at the pitch.
Got it.
Okay. Thank
in
you.
Essence.
Yes.
It's a curveball.
Wait. Whatever.
Okay.
If we would approve
okay.
It.
Other questions for Mr. Hudson or Ms. Travis? Ms.
May
Travis?
I continue?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. We interrupted you. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. I did want to, again, address some of the points of the arbitration award that we do take some issue with. Arbitration awards, as I said, are final and binding on the parties, but they are also often used by other bargaining units as precedent for future rounds of bargaining. So I think it is important to address the fact that we do disagree with some of the points of the award. In explaining his award, this arbitrator interprets the statute that governs compensation for the state. We look at 43A18 subdivision 8. And this law enumerates several factors that we consider, and three of the four factors are internal. And in the arbitration award, the arbitrator seems to say that he interprets the statute that we look at each of them with equal priority and independent of the other factors. And we take issue with this statement in the award for several reasons. Among others, the state has looked at all of the factors, but we give most emphasis to the internal factors in looking at compensation decisions. And that is in part because we have 1,800 classes that we employ statewide, and we need to look at how each of these classes compare both across classes as well as to lower and higher classes, so those who report up and down. And we also look at the organizational structure when we look at compensation decisions. Further, many of our job classes are unique, and they have no comparables in the outside market. And so in many cases, we cannot look at external comparisons. And because of the wide diversity of our business, defining an outside market is extremely difficult. And we really don't even define a market here. The external market factor, which is one of the four factors, is generally examined when there are recruitment and retention issues, where there is turnover that shows that we are not being competitive with employers of similar positions. So it is considered, but the arbitrator in his award is asking us to look at it in isolation or independent of the internal factors, and that is where we disagree with the arbitrator. In the case of this bargaining unit, for example, the engineer unit has one of the lowest turnover rates that we have in the state. In fiscal year 2015, the rate of turnover was only 2.47%, and at the time of the hearing, it was only 1.9%. So in that way, we believe that we are paying our engineers competitively with the market. The other statement that we disagree with in the arbitration award is that he says that for several years the state has not met its statutory obligation to maintain a reasonable relationship to positions outside state service. And again, we disagree with that because we believe that we have met our statutory obligations and that we have looked at overall compensation and external factors. So together with what I have said previously, we believe that when we have made compensation decisions, we have made them for reasonable factors. We have, again, put emphasis on internal factors, and we believe that that is the statutory obligation that we need to meet. And then there's one final point that I just wanted to point out with the arbitrator's decision. He focuses in particular on what is called the weighted average maximum pay in some salary surveys that were put forward. And the survey that he cites in his award includes both public and private sector employers. Particularly in the private sector, many employers do not actually pay the maximum rate. In many cases, no one is ever at the maximum rate. So in our view, the weighted average salary is the correct measure. And when we look at the weighted average salary of our engineers and other employees that are employed by the state, we believe the state of Minnesota is competitive. And in some cases, we may be slightly ahead for some of the classes that are represented by the council. So I appreciate your indulgence in allowing me to make some of those points. We believe that it is important to put those points on the record. So I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Travis. A quick question, and then the two senators. Could you review the turnover rate again? You said 2.47. Is that the average across all classifications? And you said 1.9% at the time of the year.
The turnover rate that I cited, Representative Drozkowski and the subcommittee, was for the Engineering Council. And it was 2.47% in FY15 and 1.9% as of June of 16.
So with that, Ms. Travis, what is the average, say, in the average of all the rest of the groups?
Representative Drozdowski, the average for all the other groups here in the state is 10.7%.
Wow, Mr. Hudson. Okay, thank you. Quickly, precedents. You mentioned, Ms. Travis, precedents, and can we expect additional, more arbitration from other groups because of this? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Drozdowski and members of the subcommittee, I believe that that is a possibility because they obviously will know about the arbitration award and may cite it in future negotiations.
Thank you. Senator Rest, or Senator Eaton, and then Senator Rest.
I guess the point I wanted to make was that when a bargaining unit and the state decide to go to arbitration as a mutual agreement, and they both mutually agree on an arbiter, and both sides take the risk that they may not like what the arbiter comes out with. And having made that agreement, that's why arbitration works, that we should support what came out of that agreement between the parties.
Thank you. Senator Rest.
Thank you. I agree with that, but I still have questions. not necessarily about this agreement, but how often, let's say in the past 5 years, have bargaining units and the state gone to arbitration over a contract?
Senator Rest and members of the subcommittee, first of all, only our essential units can go to interest arbitration.
What does that mean? Excuse me.
Our essential units are defined by statute, and if the essential unit cannot reach a mutual agreement with the state, they have the right to go to interest arbitration upon impasse.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Travis, what do you mean by essential units? Who are they?
The best way I can define our essential units, Senator Rust and members of the subcommittee, is to tell you which ones they are. The engineers, the nurses, which are represented by the Minnesota Nurses Association, our supervisors, which are represented by Middle Management Association, our correctional officers, which are represented by AFSCME, and we also refer to them as Unit 8, because that is the bargaining unit that they are assigned to, and our radio control operators, which are employed at Public Safety, and they are also represented by AFSCME, and they're in Unit 25. Oh, and the last one is our law enforcement unit, which is represented by the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, and those would be like our state troopers, our special agents, and our conservation officers. The two largest unions that we bargain with, MAPE and the other AFSCME, we call it the Big AFSCME, which represents five bargaining units, they are not essential. So those units cannot go to interest arbitration. Their option upon impasse is to go on strike.
I get it. Okay, thank you. I appreciate the education. I probably, everybody else here knows that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to me.
Senator Rust, I think you asked me how many times we have gone to interest arbitration in the past 5 years. It is my recollection that we went to interest arbitration twice in the last 5 years, in addition to this one before you. We went to interest arbitration with the nurses group in 2014, and we also went to interest arbitration with our law enforcement unit in the same year.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Rice.
So once an impasse has been reached, with those three, including this one, awards or decisions, how long did it take to reach them following the impasse having been reached?
Ms. Travis. Mr. Hudson.
Senator Rust and the subcommittee, are you asking how long did it take for the parties to actually get to interest arbitration?
Senator Rust.
After impasse?
No, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Travis. So, you know, they bargain, nothing's happened, they reach an impasse, they decide, the central unit decides to ask for arbitration. From that moment until the decision is reached, generally, how long does that take? Is it a month? Is it 3 months? Is it a half a year? How long does it take, usually?
Ms. Travis.
Senator Russ and the subcommittee, generally speaking, from the time that we certify the issues before the Bureau of Mediation Services to the time that we actually have a hearing, would be somewhere in the area of 3 to 4 months.
So it's relatively fast.
Thank you, Ms. Travis. Other questions, Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to hear kind of quickly who these, and maybe I missed it if you covered it, who the 990 people are, you know, that the kind of work they do, because I always think that's, for me as a legislator, it's just kind of nice to know what these folks are out doing, you know, what type, you know, type in engineering. By the way, we should probably treat them pretty good because I think it's STEM Day at the State Fair, they said, so.
Ms. Travis.
Representative Lilly and the subcommittee, the majority of the unit works at the Department of Transportation. We also have a number of engineers at the Pollution Control Agency, Department of Natural Resources, and a smattering of other agencies. The type of work they do would be designing our roads and bridges and highways, checking the plans of those designs. They also meet with consultants on various issues, doing traffic control, a number of different duties. The majority of the unit is made up of licensed engineers, land surveyors, but there's also a number of non-licensed personnel that are represented by this unit that engage in engineering-related duties.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. It's always helpful for me to kind of know who we're talking about and the work that they're doing. You know, the turnover numbers are really fascinating to me, and I would say that the 10%, I would actually almost red flag that as something's wrong, you know, but then if you look at the other number where it's so low, I don't, you know, as I age, I don't necessarily see that as much as a problem. I think people, I look at myself and my other work outside of here, you tend to, I think if people change as they age, and there's less likely to move to a different position, and it may not be money driven. You know, you might have coworkers you like, or I mean, there's other reasons that people don't move. And I think you get comfortable in your income, maybe. You know, you haven't bought, you know, you might not need to go out and buy the fancy yacht like you did when you were 20 or something. But I don't know. I'd be more worried about the 10% turnover than I would about the low number of turnover. I think that actually shows for the strength of the team and the department. But again, I don't know. But I would think that a lot of them are aging, maybe. I'd like to know the mean of the age group, and I would bet that they're less likely to transition to the other work, choosing to kind of maybe finish off their career perhaps, or, you know, less money driven maybe even, and just kind of want the stability to do good work and for the state of Minnesota. So anyways, that's just and I don't know. But that'd be my gut call as I'm aging, because I think of myself kind of
just a child.
Representative Lilly, I was concerned maybe you were going to weigh in, you know, kind of on a different side of this than you normally do, but apparently not. Other questions, members of discussion? Mr. Hudson, Ms. Trevis, anything else that you have on this particular topic?
Chair, and to the rest of the committee, no, we appreciate your time that you've taken to hear us out, hear some of the details out, and we'll just turn it over to you for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, members, that you may have for the MMB staff here today? I've got a few. Are there, Ms. Travis, Mr. Hudson, are there any other negotiations in the pipeline underway currently, or is this kind of the only activity you have going on, or do you have anything else going on with all the rest of state government?
We're, Chair.
Mr. Hudson.
We are in the process of starting up our negotiation season right now. For the most part, we will enter into negotiation in the spring of the year. We have one group that we're having some discussions with right now, though.
Mr. Hudson, and what would that group be?
We're having some preliminary discussions with SEIU currently.
SEIU. And Mr. Hudson, what characterize those discussions? Which groups are those? At which bargaining units are those, or which work units are those?
Well, I'm not sure that I understand your question, Representative Drazkowski. Could you repeat that, please?
Which units would that be? Thank you, Senator.
I see. I have a list of the units here that we negotiate with, and I'll just read those off to you. But we have AFSCME, and as Carolyn, our assistant negotiator, has represented, there are two components of that group. Here we get my notes here. Just a second. We also have MAPE, we have MMA, MGEC, MLEA, MNA, SRSEA, and then of course we have our managerial plan and then our commissioner's plan.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. So Mr. Hudson, it sounds like so all of those units are involved in some sort of negotiation right now?
Not yet. We're entering in the beginning of our negotiation season now, Representative Drazkowski and members of the committee. And we should start that for the most part with the majority of the units in the spring. Right now, there are some preliminary discussions, some very early discussions with SEIU.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hudson. What are those discussions about? Can you characterize those discussions with SEIU? What is that?
It's just preliminary, just procedural, administrative type things, nothing substantive, nothing with regards to the terms and conditions of work at this point, Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Hudson, is this all public information related to SEIU and those discussions that are going on currently?
This discussions aren't in meetings. It's just discussions, just very cursory discussions. When will we meet? Those kinds of things. Putting calendars together, and those are public, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. So what is the contract we're talking about here that they're looking at or thinking about? Mr. Hudson.
Well, those terms have not been decided just yet. Again, it's very preliminary, just procedural, administrative-type discussions. We have not, Representative Druskowski, we've not entered into any kind of contracts or any kind of talks with regards to any of the terms or conditions of work.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Hudson. So Mr. Hudson and Ms. Trevis, so SEIU, they bargain around which group of employees?
Representative Druskowski and the subcommittee, the SEIU negotiations are with the personal care attendants. Several years ago, the legislature provided the opportunity for the personal care attendants to organize. And back in the summer of 2014, the personal care attendants who work with, you know, obviously our vulnerable population in the state of Minnesota did organize, and they are represented by SEIU. M&B Labor Relations negotiates with SEIU, but those personal care attendants are not state employees. And it's my understanding that that contract goes for approval before the legislature. I do not believe it goes before this subcommittee. Am I correct?
That's my understanding.
I wanted to make sure.
Mr. Hubinger's got a comment.
Mr. Chair and members, that contract does come to the subcommittee.
Oh, it does? Come before the subcommittee. Okay, I am incorrect. So we had with SEIU, Representative Druskowski, which was the initial contract bargain. And I believe that was resolved in January of 2015, came before the legislature, and it was approved during the session of 2015.
Thank you, Ms. Trevis. So when are the active dates of that contract? When did it begin, and when does it expire?
Representative Druskowski and the subcommittee, I believe the dates are the same as the state contracts, so that runs from July 1 to June 30th, and it's a two-year contract. So it would be expiring on June 30th of 17.
Thank you, Ms. Trevis. So any other questions, members, related to that? So June 30th of 2017, Mr. Hudson, are these early discussions related to this particular contract that you're talking about?
Representative Druskowski and members of the subcommittee, it's very preliminary, the discussions are. Again, there's no substance to the discussions at this point, just administrative type things, when, where, those kinds of things. And those decisions have not even been made. It's just initial. More of a courtesy type contacts. Hey, are you you're ready? Are we getting ready? Those kinds of things. But there's been no conversations with regards to any of the terms and conditions of work. Not at all.
So thank you, Mr. Hudson. So Mr. Hudson and Ms. Trevis, so the normal time to have contract negotiations again is a spring, March or so. Is that accurate, Mr. Hudson?
Yes, that's my understanding. I would have to defer to one of our resources in terms of why this one's handled a little differently. Again, as our assistant state negotiator, Carolyn Trevis, has pointed out, they're not employees of the state, and for budgetary reasons, that information has to be brought forth to this body earlier than the rest. So this is the reason why we would enter into negotiations with SEIU. Once we've done that, this is why we would do this a little earlier than the rest, and the rest being, again, in the spring of next year.
Well, Mr. Hudson, I'm not clear on that. Thank you. But there's budget implications for every one of these contracts, whether it's this SEIU one or the other dozen or more that we entertain throughout the biennium. So I'm confused as to why that would be different. As a matter of fact, I think I and others characterized in some of our research throughout this last biennium that the amount budgeted initially by the administration across these units was significantly less than the amount that was arrived at. So there's definitely reasons for good communication, understanding in the budget process. There are certainly some shortcomings in the process that we have seen with all of the other units. So I'm wondering what if you could talk more about why this one would be special and why we are having early discussions with this one 6 months or so earlier than is normal.
Chairman Druskowski and to the rest of the subcommittee, I appreciate your answer and further questioning on clarification. It's my understanding that since these employees are not state employees, it requires a different appropriation that needs to come before you, separate from the appropriation that you would have for all other employees. So it's handled a little bit separately. Yes, you're absolutely correct. There are expenses associated with both categories of employees here, those who are our employees and those who are not state employees. But this one is a different appropriation that would be required of yourself. It's my understanding.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. Senator Rest.
And so, Commissioner, is that a statutory distinction, does that come under rulemaking? I'm just trying to understand how where does that requirement have its basis?
Deputy Commissioner Hudson.
Thank you, Senator Rest, Chairman. And to the rest of the subcommittee, I believe it is required by law, but I would have to confirm that for you.
I hope so.
Thank you. So,
Commissioner
Hudson, so could you, or somebody from your staff, let us know in the next week or so what exactly those rationale for the discussion are, those legal rationale that the senator was talking about. Be great. Any other questions? So, Commissioner and Ms. Travis, are there any other contracts or amendments coming forward that we should know about? Other than this SEIU ECA discussion.
Representative Druskowski and also to the subcommittees, members of the subcommittees, we hope to have before you soon the paid parental leave. This is something that we negotiated an MOU, and we hope to have those terms of that particular negotiation to you here pretty quickly, perhaps early September.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. So, Commissioner Hudson, so is that information public?
Rep. Druskowski, chairperson, and also to the members of this subcommittee, it is public. That information is public. Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner Hudson. So, and I had some legislation around that part of the law this last time, so I know a lot of this is public, and a lot of the frustrations I know that I and other members of this committee have had is that we don't find out about some of this stuff, including that. This is the first I've heard about it at all until after it happens. And even sometimes, like this example, and I've asked the same question in other circumstances around regular contract negotiations in the past, we learn that it has happened, but we're told we can't see the details of it until a certain date in the future. So if that's public information, Commissioner, why do we have to wait for it?
Representative Druskowski, it wasn't our intent not to keep that from yourself or any members of this subcommittee. We would get copies of what we have available, and we'll make that available to you. In fact, we'll do that here with the next couple of days. This was a very public process. Our apologies for not getting that information to you.
Thank you, Commissioner. One last question. I'm sorry for all the questions, but I'm always full of questions, and Senator knows he wants to leave. Can we, is there, if you as an agency are going to be entering into negotiations with any of these groups, can you let us know prior to those negotiations so that if some of us want to attend or these are public events, so that we can be aware of that process before it starts? Could you give us 2 weeks heads up or something like that before any negotiations begin with the SEI group, IU group, or any others?
Representative Drazkowski and to the members of the subcommittee here, I believe that is reasonable. We can certainly make you aware of those dates when we will be entering into negotiation with the bargaining unit. Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Commissioner. Okay. Other questions, members? Okay. One last housekeeping item, and members and others, I've been told, and with personal regrets here, that Mr. Shepherd is going to be retiring. Mr. Shepherd, is that true? Or was that a wild rumor that somebody was drinking or something?
Mr. Chair, I submitted notice to Mr. Hubinger, and it hasn't been rejected in 30 days. So. Retiring in October.
We are so sorry to hear that you are leaving from our perspective, Mr. Shepherd. But for you, golfing and fishing is very, very well earned, and we will definitely miss your wise and continuous counsel of this group. And members, I was told Mr. Shepherd, 35 years in your position with the House. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I actually, my first session here, I was assisting others in drafting the legislation in 1979 that created this group. So.
Wow, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Let's give him a best of luck to you. Okay, members, anything else? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope Mr. Shepherd will have time to work at the Maplewood Nature Center then with helping there with his wife. Congratulations. I just want to tell my Senate colleagues how much I valued working with Senator Metzen, and I'm glad that you said something. But he was a great colleague and just really a treasure to the whole state of Minnesota. So thank you to our Senate colleagues, thank you for recognizing him, but I really, he's going to be missed.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the Senate, we really do appreciate your recognition of one of the best-liked members of the Senate and most respected, and we're going to miss him, and I feel privileged to take his place on this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. and you will do very well at that, Senator.
We'll
rest, I'm sure. Anything else, members? And we will not adjourn, but we will depart here today and until our next meeting. Thank you.